Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy and with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Thank you for listening to your boy. So, as you know, we got to be intentional, deliberate with everything that we want to accomplish in this life. So, I will tell you two things that I want to do. One is to just be artistic and express myself and share my stories with my family, my friends, family, and fans. And two, you know, cultivate the table, set the table for myself, and hopefully garner the attention of the people that can help me, you know, share these stories with the world. So, we are continuing in this story called Hindsight, the story of a man, Bernard, who is gonna try to rob some people that robbed him, some people that kicked him out of his job. And in the last two chapters, last week, we had 5 and 6. In chapter 5, our main character had a come to Jesus moment where he said, you know what, I'm just not gonna do this. It's not worth it, at least not worth it to put other people in danger. And he was just gonna not do the robbery. And he was meeting up with the guys at Central Park to tell them that. And when they all got there, they heard a story from LaRaysha, the only female worker on their crew. And she told them how she had been raped by Peter Calhoun, which is Mr. Calhoun's great nephew. She had switched shifts with one of the coworkers, Lenny, the original overnight guy. And when she was working that night, there was a party that was going on by Peter Calhoun in Mr. Calhoun's unit. And when she went to answer a noise complaint, she was met with a drink. She didn't know that it was laced with fentanyl, though. And when the effects kicked in, next thing she knew, she didn't have any clothes on and she was being raped. And so that's unfortunate. And then when she, you know, she took a sabbatical, came back, and actually had the balls to confront Mr. Calhoun and his great nephew, she was met with vitriol. She was met with anger, as if she was the one that did the crime. And she didn't know what to do after that. So the guys, after telling that story, the guys came together, hugged, kissed, cried together, and said, fuck it, we're gonna do this anyway. In chapter 6, as you know, Bernard's twin brother, is at his place in New York. He came because he's dying from colon cancer, and Bernard can care less. They're like an old, bitter, married couple. They're not even talking around the house. And when Leonard tries to bring up anything, Bernard is like, fuck you, and he leaves the house. But one day when he came home from work, Leonard had surprised him with his niece, the only kryptonite in Bernard's life, a little girl that he had left back in Tennessee. And they got to catch up, and she got to tell him about boys and life and all this other stuff. And they also hugged and cried and kissed and they caught up. But their conversation was cut short because the brother, his colon cancer flared up, and they met him at the hospital. Long story short, the daughter leaves so they can have some last moments with each other. And Bernard learned of the same story that I read to you in the previous chapters, was kind of twisted, and there was some reasons for the things that went down. And they basically made up. At the end of the day, they made up. And the brother said that he wanted to help him in this heist, and Bernard wasn't having it. Turns out that was going to be the last night that Bernard saw him alive anyway, so it didn't matter. But anyway, we shall continue into Hindsight right now. We're getting to chapter 7 and chapter 8. And as you know, on this podcast, the Dialogue Heavy Podcast, everything thus far has been written and recited by yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So here we go. Hindsight, chapter 7. I returned to A's, the unlicensed gambling house, to make that bet with Dino that I had promised. Somehow the Knicks had won a game by blind luck and managed not to be completely swept in the playoff series, but they were by no means going to win. By the time I arrived, Dino was in his element, walking through the tables like a shark swimming through a reef. He'd point a loser out to his goons and have them escorted to a corner where business was taken care of. Now, if all went well, the loser was back at the tables and gambling with lighter pockets in no time. But if not, which was often the case, you would see a few quick movements, then someone was on the floor before being dragged out of the front door like the trash. Now, us new degenerates were so used to the dealings of Dino and his crew that no one so much as batted an eyelid when someone got their ass kicked or a pool cue broken over their head. It was sadly that brutal in those times. I, again, sat at a poker table like I had before and folded about 98% of the hands dealt. I was biding my time and waiting for Dino or one of his goons to notice me because if I had approached him with what I had in my back pocket, he probably would have smelled a rat. But after a sizable amount of Johnny Walker and chicken wings, old Dino was ready to call it a night without approaching me, and I was forced to take things into my own hands. All in, I yelled at my table. I pushed in $5,000 pre-flop with the shittiest hand known to man. 2-7 offsuit. Now, for those of you who don't play poker, the reason why those cards suck is because you have no straight draw, no flush draw, and even if you wind up with a pair of sevens or twos by the end of it, you're unlikely to have the best hand anyway. Of course, there's the anomaly of getting a 7-7-2 once the dealer turns a flop, but let's be real, that almost never happens. Most players at a table such as those would just have folded pre-flop, even with a decent hand, because it wasn't worth calling and paying $5,000 just to see you were beat outright. But to my detriment, a Latino gentleman in a hoodie had a pair of lucky as shit aces and called me, and already my night was making a turn for the fucking worst. But it did get Dino's goons' attention. And soon he was sitting at the edge of my table looking in on the action. When we flipped our cards over to be revealed, the crowd went nuts and they all let me know how stupid I was for making such a haste action. I shook my head and sat back as the flop came. 2, ace, 7. Holy shit, a man yelled at the irony. I smirked on the outside, although I was shitting my pants on the inside. Now, I had two pairs, and the other guy's three of a kind, but the other guy's three of a kind still had me by the balls. The dealer dealt the burner card, then flipped the turn. 7. Oh, fuck! Someone yelled, get the fuck out of here, said another. The crowd was going crazy. Some of my degenerate buddies were jumping up and down, and the whole A's bar was surrounding my table. But I tried to stay stoic as I could. One was because after all the years of bad breaks and almost wins, I knew that you could never celebrate too soon, too early. And two was because I had Dino and his goon looking at my every movement, which was my plan from the get. Soon the crowd hushed up and the dealer patted the green felt table to begin the finish. Now, so you know, I was in the winner's circle at the moment. I had a 7-up full house with my opponent having just 3 of a kind. His percentage of winning was less than 2% because only one card could save him, the last ace in the deck. There was $10,000 on that damn table and everybody just wanted to see a fucking spectacle. I would have been the luckiest motherfucker alive after starting with the shittiest hand and going against the strongest and winning. And the guy on the other hand across the table would have been lucky to come back after essentially being dead in the water. It was a miracle either way, but I just couldn't wait for it to be over, to be honest. The dealer dealt a burnt card, and when the river came, just like I had predicted, the crowd went fucking apeshit. The guy only could have won with one card, and the prick got it. Ace of fucking hearts. The heart that broke my heart. And my opponent smiled as if he knew it was coming for him the whole time. I did my best to play it cool. I had to watch as he bent over and raked in all that hard-earned savings from my crew and at the Waldorf, and I felt horrible for them. People rubbed my back and told me it'd be all right. All the regular crap people say when your loss doesn't affect them, but it hurt all the same. Because it wasn't just me losing, it was others as well. But as I was playing chess, not checkers, the white whale I was looking to land bit the hook. I grabbed my jacket and was saying my goodbyes to old friends when Dino's guy, came over and escorted me over to him. Dino was back at his spot in the corner with a fresh plate of chicken wings and a bottle of Johnny Walker. He was definitely drunk, but he was coherent enough to try to play me like a fiddle. He shook his head. That was a tough beat. Yeah, Well, you lose some, you win some, I said. Ah, you're taking it pretty well, though. What'd you do, win the lottery or something? Nope. My mom's life insurance paid out. Get the fuck out of here, Dino said, laughing. Yep, I said, just yesterday. Dino couldn't help but to glance over at a goon, smirking. And you couldn't wait to spend it, huh? Mommy must be turning over in her grave. Nope, I said. Actually, that was my last bet, man. Well, no, not really. I'm going to go down to AC and put a bet on the Knicks after that. But the Knicks, Dino said. Hell yeah, I told him. After that last game, they got to have some kind of luck. Dino sat back in his chair. He could barely hold on to his excitement. He knew the Knicks were never going to win, and he couldn't wait to take my money and laugh at the pathetic, degenerate gambler again. I'll take your action, Beansy. How much of mommy's money you laying? Nah, Dino, I think I'm going to do this thing right. The fuck you mean right, Dino said. Have I not given you all the money when you won? It was me who had to chase your narrow black ass down Madison Avenue. Shit, I'm doing you a favor anyway. Plus, I'm sure AC's odds are dog shit. Yeah, you got me there, I told him. Then, Dino said. Alrighty, Dino. 50 then. What? Wait, 50K? Yep, I said, trying my damnedest not to smile at the slight bit of surprise and worry that came over Dino's face. You got that kind of money? You expect me to believe that shit? Well, not on me, I said. Of course, but have you ever seen me lose $5,000 in a hand without blinking an eye? Dino finished his shot after thinking. Then he looked at me, shifting his focus from one eye to the other, then back again. After that, he waved me off. Fuck, I thought. He's not going to take the bet. I was fucked. All of my friends' life savings put together for me to go down to the A's and cause a diversion for Dino and get him to take the bet was all for nothing. And the Waldorf plan was compromised significantly. I would have to go back to the crew, regroup, start working on plan B. Shit. All right, Dino. Catch you on the next one, I guess, I said. Then I walked towards the house door, but right before I can get out the door, Dino stopped me and his ego did all the talking henceforth. Make it 100K and you got a deal. Deal, I said, not sure of myself. Dino walked over to me while he sucked the buffalo wing sauce off of his fingers. Then he gripped my shoulder and peered those Charles Manson eyes into my soul and told me something that would haunt my dreams, the few dreams that I had left. Beansy, you're going to be watching the game, right? Of course I am. Good, good. Because at the end of that game, I'm going to call you. I'm going to call you just one time for my money, if you lose, of course. And if you don't answer, you're dead. And when I find you, there will be no reason for you to beg for your life because it'll already be over. You won't even see it coming. You might not even see my face. It'll just be dark. And after a while, you'll realize that I caught your black ass. And with that, Dino went back to his hoods. And I walked out of the A's bar with a smile on my face. Chapter 8. Technology had come a long way since my days back in Tennessee where we milked cows and had gas station attendants pumping your gas, but the Waldorf had the best of the new. In fact, it was the first state-of-the-art high-rise living facility that ran solely on electricity, and it took my old ass forever to learn how to use it. To put it simply, the inventors adopted the prison system set up where each door was electronically opened by a master doorman, someone like me or my crew, to each residency, just like the correctional officers call out to open a cell, but ours was just a bit more sophisticated. Of course, a resident could open and close their own door without notifying the staff, but a smart computer recorded every time each unit was opened and closed with the time and date processed. In case of a power outage, there was a generator to pick up the slack for the main power, and in case that generator happened to go out, there was a backup. In fact, the only way to cut the power off to the building completely was by using keys that only board members had access codes for, and access codes that only the doorman possessed. You needed both parties to shut down the master generator way down in the basement under the parking garage. And even then, that same master system rebooted the whole place, and the lights and functions were back on within 3 minutes, with the authorities automatically notified. Then, if you add on top of that there were 5K cameras on every floor recording 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with virtually no blind spots in the joint, the Waldorf was fucking Fort Knox, and me and my skeleton crew had our work cut out for us. The last day as an employee at the Waldorf, I couldn't focus. There was just too much at stake, and everything and everyone was depending on me for not only their financial futures, but also for survival. I'd gone over the plans about a million times. It felt like no stone was unturned, but as you know, performing is a whole nother animal in comparison to practice, and my crew was simply unpracticed in performing crime, live, not to mention under a time crunch. I trained them the best I could, but I couldn't control their actions when it was go time. All I can do was lead by doing my part. I'd managed to get out of A's alive with the first part, but the second part hit closer to home because it involved an innocent party that I loved. Back in the park, the day Miss Gailey told me of my fate, she'd also told me that she would be giving me a farewell gift on my last day at work. She didn't know, of course, but seeing her on that day served as the catalyst that catapulted my plans to rob Mr. Calhoun into orbit. So when she called just 10 minutes before my last shift was over to remind me to come up, I was both happy and terrified. "Oh, come in, Miss Gailey said when her and Fifi greeted me at Unit 6237. I walked in a few steps and stopped. Miss Gailey's place was immaculate, with beautiful marble floors and Italian statues that mirrored the ones in Rome. One side of her unit was all glass with a view of all of Central Park, and inside she housed plush mahogany couches with matching end tables. Every little thing was labeled and put in its proper place, which was a far cry from my hole in the wall back in Brooklyn. "Take a seat, Bernard," Miss Gailey said, satisfied with my shock of her place. Okay, Miss Gailey, but I do gotta get going." "Well, where? It's not like you got a job." Miss Gailey laughed and put me a bit more at ease. "Relax, Bernard. You're officially a guest at the Waldorf now. Those same rules from before, as of 10 minutes ago, don't apply anymore." I forced a smile. "You're right, Miss Gailey. I know I am," she said. "Now, stop being nervous, take a seat, and wait for me. I'm just finishing wrapping up your gift right now." I was nervous, all right. She was right. But it wasn't because I didn't feel comfortable in her place. It was because I needed something from her, and I needed to take it and put it back all before she knew. "Okay," I said. "Mind if I take in your beautiful home a little more closely?" "Sure," Miss Gailey yelled from the hall. I tiptoed through Miss Gailey's place with a fucking purpose, scrutinizing every label in the kitchen and office area in seconds. But I couldn't find what I was looking for. I walked down the hall, past Miss Gailey to her second room without being noticed, and still found nothing. But as I made my way back to the living room, I passed Miss Gailey sitting on her bed, gift in hand. And that's when I saw it mounted on the wall for whatever reason. Next to her bed, above her side table, was a glass case of keys. Inside it, the master generator key I needed to shut the Waldorf down. I stared at that case so long that I hadn't realized Miss Gailey noticed me at the door. She saw my gaze and looked at her case before laughing. I know, strange place, right? Snapping out of my trance, I gave off a laugh that was only worthy of the Razzie Award in acting. unusual, I uttered, but I don't know about strange. "Oh, stop it," Miss Gailey said, embarrassed, before grabbing my gift and exiting the room. Miss Gailey took me by the arm and was walking me back into the living room area when I stopped her. What's the protocol? With what? With the keys and the purse and stuff. You must have some type of routine, right? Yes, I do, Miss Gailey said as she tried again to make her way to the living room, but I didn't budge. I'm old, Bernard. Sharp, but old. If I don't put everything I need in my purse, the second I'm out of bed, I'm liable to leave and forget anything. That's the reason for all the labels, too. Why I also make a step-by-step checklist of things I need done every day. Fifi and I can't be running around here like little chickens with our head cut off, can we? Can we? Hey, Miss Gailey, I said, you're not old. Look at this place. You've done great for an old college dropout. That's funny, Bernard. And sweet, Miss Gailey said as she looked down the hallway towards the living room. Her body language was telling me that she had had enough of standing in the otherwise empty hallway. I looked down the hall at Miss Gailey's old grandfather clock. It was 1:31 p.m. 1 minute past the time Laratia was supposed to call and distract Miss Gailey while I found a way into her key safe. Finally, Miss Gailey tugged on my arm again, and I had to follow her. I couldn't give off any suspicion of what was going on. Now, 9 minutes later, when I exhausted every excuse to stay in Miss Gailey's unit, like playing with Fifi and asking for a second drink of water, Miss Gailey walked me to her door, and I was about to be pushed and walked me to her door and was about to be and was about to push me and our plans for the Waldorf out the pasture when the phone finally rang. My heart damn near skipped a beat, and before Miss Gailey could leave me for dead, I used the simple excuse for a re-entry I was saving for the exact situation. Miss Gailey, can I use your restroom real quick? Sure, she said as the phone rang. First door on the right. Thank you. I shot down the hall and, of course, took the second door on the left. I closed the bathroom door and listened as Miss Gailey spoke to Laratia. The plan was to keep Miss Gailey on the phone for no less than 90 seconds, but a multitude of things could happen at the front desk that can end that call fast, so I needed to get to that key and get the fuck out of there. Miss Gailey's glass case didn't have a lock on it, which was great, but there were about 100 keys there, and the label printing was small. Like Miss Gailey, I too was getting old, so being farsighted was of no help. I read and read about as fast as I could while listening to Laratia trying to prolong the pointless conversation when I finally found the awkward gold-shaped golden key. I bait and switched it with the quickness, but when I turned around to exit, Miss Gailey was standing right behind me, and I froze. Ah, shit, I thought to myself. The jig was up. And Miss Gailey had caught me black-handed. She looked a bit flustered, and I didn't know what to say. And my facial expression was a dead giveaway anyway. Miss Gailey, I am so sorry, I said. Me too, Miss Gailey said and shook her head. That you've been instructing people how to get around the Waldorf for 25 years, and you can't understand a simple first door in the right direction? Huh? I said, come here, old man, and let me walk you out, Miss Gailey said, and she took my arm again. I still couldn't comprehend what was happening, but I played along in hopes of a miracle. At Miss Gailey's front door, she gave me a hug, and she gave me a kiss on the cheek, and then she gave me a gift and closed the door in my face. I was miffed, to say the least. I didn't know if she actually caught me or not. She could have let me go because she loved me, or she could have let me go not knowing if I would hurt her with just the two of us in her unit. Shit, for all I knew, she could have been calling the board or the police department as I rode down the elevator to the lobby. On my side of things, I didn't know if I should call the whole thing off or alert the crew and let them choose for themselves. I would be the only one in trouble at that point, and I would be the only one killed by Dino when the Knicks lost that game. But there was no time for that. I had to put everything in the back of my head, and that's when I made the decision. We are gonna do that shit. We are gonna storm the Waldorf. That night. And boom. Beep, 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 beep. Thank you for listening, guys. I know this was a tough one to get through. It took me about 5 times to try to record it, even to get it to the level of which you heard it, which is not that great, but it's all good. So, you know what's going on. The everything is tossing and turning, and you're starting to hear parts of the plans and stuff like that that are going to lead to this great heist. And we're going to continue on with it, man. So I'm not going to take too much more of your time. I hope you liked it. I hope you loved it. And if you didn't, I hope you listened and you learned something from it. So I will see you next week with more on Hindsight. And that's it. I'm out of here. Peace. I'm out.